I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into the official Maize and Brew Hoops podcast. I'm Chris Castellani, joined today by Anthony Broom and Daniel Dash, the same crew that we rolled with last week. Michigan basketball now rocking a 6-0 record, but it was not without some very tense moments on Sunday's game, their first conference game against the Penn State Nittany Lions. They also won, beat Toledo what day was that? Everything's blurring together
Wednesday.
Now. Was that what's that?
Wednesday.
That was Wednesday. Yeah, it shows how fast the news cycle is changing here in 2020.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's still March. So
yes, it's March 273rd today, and we're still rolling with that. But you know, it's funny because last Sunday we said, all right, team's 4-0. You know, they had that game against Oakland where they struggled, but checking off all the boxes, going up against NC State, going to be kind of their first real test of the season. That game, of course, canceled because of COVID. And we'll just jump right into the first game that went down this week. I do give Toledo a lot of credit. I appreciate them stepping up, allowing themselves to come to Chrysler. And I think we all kind of wondered, you know, Toledo, not a tremendous opponent by any means, but with limited amount of time to kind of plan for this game, you wondered how Juwan's crew would come out, especially early on. And honestly, I think through six games, this has been far and away their most complete game. Michigan dominates the Rockets 91-71. Obviously 20-point blowout, but really outside of, a 7-11 point game there in the second half, but really Michigan came out and dominated this thing from the jump and never looked back. And it was one of those games where, you know, we talked about how this is going to be a team that's probably going to be more athletic than most. And we saw that on display, but it wasn't just their athleticism. It was their size. And that's where Michigan really thrived down low in the beginning of this game. Austin Davis, who sadly we'll talk about a little bit later with his injury, but was having a career night. And Dickinson, again, coming off the bench for what will probably be the last time in his collegiate career, had a wonderful game as well. So, I mean, pretty much all in all, would you guys agree, 20-point game against Toledo, what were some of the other big takeaways? What else did I miss here?
I mean, you kind of hit on all of it. It was a complete performance. It was, again, when you go through a look at Michigan's schedule through Wednesday, we'll talk about the Sunday game here in a bit, but you went – put up 96 points against Bowling Green, 81 against Oakland, albeit it was an overtime, 84 against Ball State, 80 against UCF, and then 91 against Toledo. Like, this is a blister. I mean, offensively, they have been a blistering team through the first, I mean, before Sunday, through the first, you know, five games there. And we're at a point, you know, a lot of people, we've been referencing KenPom a lot on here. We're still kind of in the process of getting working the preseason data out of it, and it becomes more reliant on what this team is right now. Where we stand today, they are 7th in offense in the country, only behind, should have been more prepared, Iowa, Gonzaga, Baylor, Villanova, LSU, and Creighton. That's it. There are only 6 teams better than or more efficient than them on offense so far this season. So, that was kind of the exclamation point on a non-conference slate that has, again, it's been a pick your poison team. The one constant in all that is, maybe Franz Wagner has a good night. Maybe Isaiah Livers puts together a couple really good nights. The constant has been Hunter Dickinson. And I'm excited to talk about what he does moving forward. But again, you know, it's a non-conference slate. We've talked about it. It was truncated. You usually get about 12 to 13 of those games, depending on if you're in one of those preseason tournaments or not. You got 5 this year. And if you go again by KenPom, Toledo is the best team that you've played so far. They were the 107th ranked team in the country. So it's, you hang your hat on being 5-0 after that. It's not like you've played some really great competition, and they were tested at times, but really it was about as thorough and complete outside of that Oakland game of a non-conference slate that you could kind of ask for out of this team.
I think those are all good points. You touched on the scoring. Ironically enough, this is the first Michigan team to score at least 80 points in their first five games since Juwan Howard's freshman year when the first got there. So for the first time since 1991, they put up at least 80 in their first five games. That 91 team put up at least 80 in their first eight games. Obviously, Michigan's streak ended on Sunday, which we'll touch on later. But I thought the biggest point that Juwan made that felt pretty applicable in the world that we're living in is the turnaround time and the fact that it was so reminiscent of an NCAA tournament game or a Big Ten tournament game where you have a matter of 24 to 48 hours to prepare for a new opponent. And I mean, when the news came down on Monday morning or early Monday afternoon of last week that NC State wouldn't be making the trip to Ann Arbor, the game came together in 12 hours. The staff was in the building, I'm sure working overtime to chop up film, prepare a scouting report, a game plan. And then by the time Michigan actually took the court on Wednesday, it had been only about 48 hours since they actually found out who they were going to play. So that's the kind of thing that, I mean, that kind of experience at least is valuable looking toward March. I mean, that feels like an eternity from now, but I mean, living through that kind of experience with six newcomers on the team is something that really shouldn't be slept on going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And that's a really, that's a neat stat. I can't believe I hadn't heard that before about Michigan going for 80 plus, you know, in the first five games since the first time since Juwan Howard was a player at U of M. I do think one of the things that was far improved in this game and really in both games, we'll talk more about it when we get to Penn State, defensive intensity, Toledo only shooting 40% from the floor, you know, threw in a couple prayers, threw in a couple threes, but for the most part, I thought Michigan's defense pretty smothering pretty much all night. Now, one of the big stories, sadly, because for the most part, this was, and I mean this in the best way possible. And Anthony, we've had many of a discussion about this football team where we've said they aren't boring. This was a fairly boring game. And I mean that in the best way. Sometimes boring is a good thing. Toledo at home in the middle of December should probably be pretty boring. They went out, they took care of business, but sadly there was kind of one very unfortunate piece of news, and that was Austin Davis, who, despite only playing 12 minutes, set a career high in points, had 12 points, three rebounds, scored, I believe, the team's first eight or first 10, a lot of them layups and dunks. I mean, he was really imposing his will early on. Injured, came out a couple days later. Juwan said that it was let me make sure I'm pronouncing this right, and correct me if I don't, plantar fasciitis, right, in the foot.
Close enough.
Yeah, sure, yes.
We're not doctors here.
Exactly. But, you know, very, very unfortunate. And Juwan said it will be several weeks before they reevaluate. You know, I mean, it's, you feel bad for Austin Davis, program guy who really came alive in the latter part of last season and had earned the right to be a starter here in 2020, 2021. You know, you really hope that he can come back. A lot of people, when we saw the injury, because it wasn't a rolled ankle or anything, I think a lot of people were worried could be an Achilles. Wasn't. You hope that he can come back, but I guess we should just talk a little bit here about, you know, how does it affect this basketball team? Because one of the big things that we've talked about with this team really from the jump, even before the season started, depth. They play 9-10 deep. They can, you know, there's 12 different guys who could probably come off the bench, or 12 different guys on the team who can score for you. That becomes severely limited due to this injury.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of part one of what will be a two-part discussion this week as one of my takeaways from the last two games. The part one of it is that obviously what has to happen when Austin Davis goes down injured is Hunter Dickinson. I mean, we knew he's the best center on the team. He's been deserving of the chance to start probably from the jump this season, but again, it's a process that's playing itself out. So first and foremost, he's in the starting lineup. The circumstances around it aren't ideal, but he was going to be there soon anyways. So that's first and foremost. Probably the second thing would be that what you're going to need now is you need good minutes from Brandon Johns at the five, which is something that he's been inconsistent doing at times. And we'll get to how that pertained to Sunday's game. And then Terrence Williams, when you go small, is going to probably play a little bit of the five as well. And maybe I again, off the top of my head, I don't know if we've seen this look yet, but there might be some looks where maybe Livers plays a small ball five as well. So it really does. I mean, for as much as people like to brag on the foul, Austin Davis, he's nothing more than a bench player. Well, if that's what you believe he is, now you're without one of your really more critical pieces. So what you need moving forward is more from, first and foremost, Hunter Dickinson will be drinking from the fire hose. Now he's going to probably get 28 to 30 minutes of run per night, which is great because it looks like he's up for the task there. He physically looks the part, he mentally looks the part. But you don't want that guy to wear down either. So Brandon Johns needs to give you some good minutes. Terrence Williams needs to continue giving you good minutes. I think that's been another through line of these first 5 to 6 games, is that when he comes out there, he might have some stretches here and there where, you know, he looks like a freshman, but it's the line that keeps ringing in my head when I see him play, from Phil Martelli: Terrence Williams impacts winning. So I'm really excited to see how he progresses as well.
I'd agree with that. I think you got to look at the reason why Juwan actually invited Austin back for the fifth year, and that's to give you the short bursts of offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what he provided value in doing last year. He leapfrogged Colin Castle on the depth chart and chased him out of Ann Arbor because Davis ended up being so consistent in that 3 to 4 minutes here, 5 to 6 minutes here, go in. He's got a post bag for the ages. I mean, if he was a little bit more athletic, this would be a guy with a much higher ceiling. But, I mean, he's very technical around the rim, and he scores. I mean, he shoots. I think this year he's at up over 70% from the field. I mean, this is a guy who's a reliable post scorer. And without that, you just, in those short bursts where Davis would have taken the ball into the post, you need to look for other ways to produce on offense. And so far, I don't think Brandon Johns has exactly provided that.
Yeah, and the other thing is too, is like Austin Davis knew what his, like they talked about this last year, what his role was going to be. It's not surprising that eventually he was probably going to be someone who maybe started the season and then passed the baton to Hunter Dickinson. Did they expect it might be a Wally Pipp type deal? Probably not. But I think that, you know, for him, we look, you know, fast forward to maybe what it looks like when he comes back, he'll be fine at whatever role he plays. Now, the concern I would have is that the most effective minutes that you've gotten out of a guy like Terrence Williams so far are the minutes that he does play with Hunter Dickinson. And does, how much is that, you know, you're not, one of the upsides of playing, of having Davis start the game, is that you could bring both of those guys off the bench as a, you know, a 1-2 punch with a lot of chemistry that had fresh legs. They're going to get run together. But I don't know if it'll be as much. So it does have a chain reaction that goes through the rest of the lineup. So, but Austin Davis, by all accounts, a guy who they look at as another assistant coach, someone who, again, you know, it might be kind of an old man yells at cloud type of take, but you know, a lot of times you see talented bigs come into, you know, when they come to that next level of basketball, they might have all the talent in the world, but aren't really willing to bang around or play physical. And Hunter Dickinson's gotten that from the jump every day in practice. And I think that's where he does have a leg up on all the other young centers in the Big Ten. So, we knew this day was probably coming at some point. Michigan will have to adjust. Their depth will be tested because you don't have another true five on the roster. But I do think they have the pieces there to overcome that.
And that depth, I mean, immediately, I feel like, was put to the test with, you know, how some guys did or did not perform on Sunday's game against Penn State. And we're going to talk about that when we get back. But real quick, Anthony, you got some word from our friends over at Home Field Apparel.
Hey guys, Anthony from Mason Brew here to introduce you to our friends and sponsors of the podcast, HomeFieldApparel.com. Homefield is a premium collegiate apparel brand located right in the heart of Big Ten country in Indianapolis, and makers of some of the most comfortable items of clothing you will ever own. Homefield launched its Michigan collection in early November with several awesome vintage designs that capture a lot of the things we love about the Wolverines. Everything they do and design for all schools comes from a place of love that honors the history of some of our favorite institutions across the country. So if you're looking for a gift for that Tulane grad of yours, or simply want to add some North Dakota State gear to your collection, in addition to the Michigan stuff you buy, They are the place to do it. Our listeners, our readers, the Maize & Brew family can get 20% off your first purchase using the promo code MNB at homefieldapparel.com. That's promo code MNB at homefieldapparel.com for 20% off your first purchase. I promise you, their gear will become an instant favorite in your collection.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
In the second game that we saw last week, it went down yesterday, Michigan in their first conference game of the season, narrowly, ever so narrowly escaped the Penn State Nittany Lions, a 62-58 victory. Well, maybe, you know, the Oakland game was pretty ugly, but I think offensively the ugliest game of the year so far. After scoring 80 plus, you score 62 against a Penn State team that, once again, as a team I feel like I've said this every year about Penn State for the last 15 years. I don't know how good they are. I don't know if they're good. They just went on the road and beat the number 15 team in the country by 20. They always seem like a bit of a mess. Last year, maybe being an exception, but Michigan did not play a great game. They did not play a great game offensively. They struggled for long stretches after getting off to a really hot start, beginning of that game up by as many as 15 points. Before we get into what were some problems, I will just start off by saying last week, and this was, you know, I actually look smart, you know, with what I said last week, that at some point, this team, which I think has some really good shooters and some really good scorers, is going to have to win some games ugly because that is the nature of the beast in the Big Ten. They just did that. A 4-point game where you held your opponent to 58, but there were some serious problems, mainly offensively, and we're going to talk about those, but at the same time, 6-0, and I don't want to be too critical of them because they did something that last year I don't know if they would have been able to do. They did one time against Rutgers, but besides that, you know, a classic Big Ten game where there were several big scoring runs on both ends, some extremely questionable officiating, but overall a not so squeaky clean, but a win nonetheless for Michigan.
Yeah, we talked about last week. We kind of questioned the ability, or, you know, we were going to say we won't know what this team is until they get into a bar fight. And this was that. you know, to go from scoring 80 points in every game that you've played this year, 90 points in a few of them, to go down from that to 62 that's a hell of a drop off. And, oh, yeah. You know, we've talked about, you know, defensively. Michigan's, I think over the last week or so, maybe since last we spoke, Michigan's risen from like 46 defensively on KenPom up to 35. So I've talked about before how I don't think that defense is going to be their calling card per se, but I think they had top 25 potential on that side of the ball or that side of the floor. And they are improving there. The last two games have been really nice, strong efforts. I think the most concerning thing about this game for me was that you were up by this is going to happen in college basketball, but you were up by 15. And then the officiating, which I thought it was consistent, but at times not great on Sunday. Some bad calls, a couple lapses, and you go into the locker room only up 9. And Penn State kind of comes out in the second half and just stays hot and, you know, had the lead for a bit there. So it's good for them to be tested like that, especially like you said, you know, for the guy like Dickinson who was being thrown into the fire. You know, I'm sure we'll get more into this, but Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers, once again, they didn't play great, which has been a little more the norm for Wagner than it has for Livers. Livers has had, you know, kind of quietly a pretty awesome year to this point. But
right.
I think when push came to shove, what you had at the end of the game was Wagner makes a pretty critical block in one of the later possessions there. I think it was with less than 2 minutes left. And then, you know, Livers gets a chance to sink a couple free throws to win you a basketball game or seal a win for you. And he does. He was 8 for 8 again. The guy doesn't miss from there. So, you know, despite it being a pick your, you know, again, this is going to be a kind of a pick your poison, pick your player of the day. Chris, to reference the Tigers, one of those pick the stick type teams. You still got contributions from those guys late, and I'll throw it back to, or throw it over to Daniel with this. Eli Brooks, I think, is not being talked about enough as good of a two-way player as he is. I mean, he might be. First of all, I think that Dickinson, you can make the argument he's Michigan's best player right now. You can make the argument also that Brooks is your best all-around player on both ends of the floor.
Absolutely. I think especially on the defensive end, what he does as an on-ball defender and even as an off-ball defender, the way he just occupies passing lanes and creates havoc, I think that adds so much value to a team that, as you mentioned with the KenPom rankings, is significantly better at the other end of the floor. I think without Brooks, Michigan might be in a much worse spot defensively, at least on the perimeter. But the way Brooks, even with the communication and now as a senior and recently named captain, I think it's really all moving in the direction for him to, I mean, you could put him in the conversation with some of the best defensive guards in the Big Ten at this point. I think another one of the big takeaways that I had today was, I think, very similar to the Oakland game. You really learn who Michigan's going to lean on down the stretch. Yeah. And like the Oakland game, we learned today that even in Big Ten play, that's going to be Hunter Dickinson. I mean, down the stretch, it seemed like the ball was in his hands every single possession. And I mean, Juwan Howard being a big man coach, you could see that he has such an emphasis on getting the ball down into the post. And I mean, Dickinson was the one who had the game tying basket with 2 minutes left. And Dickinson was the one who put them up with the go-ahead layup on the next possession. So you could see that, like Oakland, where they were getting him the ball on every single possession down the stretch in overtime, they really have a lot of confidence going to him. So I'd say my two biggest takeaways of the bar fight were Brooks's value on defense and the way that they rely on Hunter Dickinson at the offensive end down the stretch.
Yeah, and look, it was Dickinson down the stretch, but he played 27 minutes. It was Dick, the offense really ran through him when he was in the game. I mean, he made 9 field goals. Michigan only made 20. I mean, so 45% of the made field goals they have came off of him. And it's not like he's a volume shooter, right? He only shot the ball 14 times. I mean, his field goal percentage at this point in the season is extremely high. The a few takeaways that I have, and yes, I thought Eli Brooks as a defender continues to shine. His defense, that final possession when Michigan was up 2.
Oh.
Flawless.
Chef kiss.
I mean, that was like somewhere Luke Yaklich is watching that and smiling. I mean, that was absolutely pristine. That's like fundamental stuff that you teach. You dream to have a guy play defense like that. But a few takeaways I noticed, going back to his freshman season, I know obviously he's played different roles and I love this guy. I love the dude to death, but that's about as bad a game as I've seen Isaiah Livers play. Now, with that said, automatic from the foul line, thank God, and really the team in general. That is one area that they have improved on immensely. 17 of 20 from the foul line today, and I know they had those two big misses, and we'll talk about them maybe in a second, but you know, he was great from the line, just looked really lost in this game. But you know what, Isaiah Livers is a great player. He's been here for 4 years. He's won a lot of games, pretty much the heart and soul of the team. I think he'll get it back. We're 6 games into the season now. I think it's time we start to evaluate and look at what's up with Franz Wagner. Because we know Franz Wagner, very highly recruited player, you know, has a pedigree here, the brother of, you know, an all-time great Michigan basketball player, and had a solid freshman year a season ago. Very highly touted this season. I mean, almost unanimously across the board, people had him first team all Big Ten. And he's been frustrating to watch this year, because I think we all agree that player is in there somewhere. He has the ability, but it's he played, let me look, 36 minutes today. That's more minutes than anybody else played, both teams combined. Shot the ball five times and turned it over once, traveled. Yeah, I mean, I think that's generous with the one turnover, because I saw him throw some errant passes as well. He is playing in a way that I never – the word to describe him right now is a word I never thought I would use to describe a Wagner, and that is rather unconfident. And I don't know if it is just the equivalent of a, you know, of a great baseball player kind of going through an 0 for 20 slump, but he's been, even in the quote unquote good games he's played, he hasn't been nearly as flashy as I feel like he is capable of playing. Do you guys have any sort of explanation? Cause I'm trying to wrap my head around it as to why he's been so just not quite where we expected him to be this year.
I think you said it well. I think it looks like he's thinking rather than playing. Yeah. I think whereas most players take a major leap in their sophomore year, I think Franz is taking a slight step back. I mean, this is a guy who averaged 17 points in Michigan's last five games last year. Really looked like he was, especially with the amount of ball handling up for grabs this year without Xavier Simpson, I would like to see Franz play on the ball a bit more. But, I mean, Mike Smith and Eli Brooks have really dominated the ball. And that's really not a bad thing. I just think that it limits Wagner's growth. I think it puts a ceiling on how far he can come from last year's performance. And right now he's fallen short of where he was at the end of last year. I think the biggest thing that I've noticed is his three-point shooting volume is way down. I mean, this is a guy who's taken 3, 4, even 5, 6 attempts per game last year. I mean, I'll pull up the exact stat. But right
now, I've got it right here for you. He was taking 5 per game. This year, he's down to 2. These were the stats for 5 games on ESPN. They don't have it updated yet, but holding steady shooting percentage, his field goal percentage total is actually up. He was 45.2 last year. He's up to 51 point. Again, this is through Sunday, without Sunday's game. About 30% on threes, which is about where he was last year. But yeah, it's cut down quite a bit. Really all the stats across the board. I mean, he's up in rebounding, up in assists, points down a little bit, but again, we know this isn't the guy we saw at the tail end of last season.
No.
Right. And I think a big part of that has to do with the way the offense has transformed since the end of last season. You think about what was Xavier Simpson? Xavier Simpson was a ball dominant guard who kind of made a living getting into the paint and collapsing defenses. And when that would happen, you had Wagner on one wing and Livers on the other wing. And I guess Simpson would just kick out either of those two. This year, it's a totally different offense where it's harder for Wagner to find a shot like that in rhythm. And it seems like to get that shot, he's going to have to create it. And without the ball in his hands, when Brooks and Smith have it, that becomes a lot harder for him.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. Now, before, we call it a show, there were a few more things I got to bring up. You guys already alluded to it, but Hunter Dickinson, what he's doing right now, I mean, we're beyond just like, oh, this guy's a good freshman story. I mean, he's like playing like one of the best players in the Big Ten right now, like straight up.
It's obviously different positions, but he's kind of doing a Brostakis thing right now where we're looking at each other through the first couple games they play and going, is this an NBA guy? Like after this year?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. You feel that.
especially, I mean, when you look at, I don't know if Michigan's expecting that, but with Musa Diabate coming in next year, like that's, I'm starting to feel less and less confident that it's great for him. I mean, if he shows out the rest of the year like this, I mean, that'd be awesome. You hope he would be able to do something like go pro, but he's been that good. And it's, again, it's going to, you look at the schedule here and it's going to get more difficult. Not against Nebraska, Maryland, Northwestern, Minnesota, Penn State. Again, I mean, those are KenPom outside of Nebraska. Those are KenPom top, 70 teams. It's going to really be, I think he's going to keep feasting. I think really until we get until a game like where they play at Minnesota at home on January 12th. I think that might be kind of a game you circle and saying, all right, if this guy, I mean, he's for real, we know that, but that might be the difference in him being, having a pretty good freshman season and putting together something special.
Yeah.
Because right now, quite honestly, he might, I'm trying to avoid a hot take here. Is it a hot take to say he might be the best freshman big man Michigan's had since Juwan Howard? Is that a hot take?
I mean, who else would there be?
I mean, there's Mitch McGarry, but he had six good games.
Five games
at the end of the year.
Right.
We're there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. With the way he's going, with as seasoned as he looks, it's not just that. He's their best player right
yeah.
now. Like, period. I've tried to fight back against it that because I'm a huge Livers guy, but like
six games is not hyperbole anymore. Like,
right. It's six games where you're making men look like boys down low. I mean, he is a matchup nightmare for everyone that's gone up against him, but that does kind of lead me to our last point here. And that's that, you know, with Davis out, Michigan was forced to, you know, give Brandon Johns some time at the five. Brandon Johns is not a bad player at all. And I like him. I think that he has the ability to provide a major spark and a lot of energy. But again, the word that kind of comes to mind, and Brendan Quinn wrote an article about this on The Athletic last year, not the most confident player. And I think that was reflected. He was one of only two Michigan players to miss a free throw today, which, you know, happens. Four turnovers. And I think near the end of that game, you saw the trust maybe isn't there with Brandon Johns. And that's why they went with Terrence Williams played 2 minutes this whole game. And they were two of the biggest minutes of the entire game. And yeah. He's, I believe, 2, maybe even 3 inches shorter than Brandon Johns. But with Davis out, as good as Dickinson is, you know, he's not playing 35, 40 minutes a night. And I think that's going to be one of the big storylines to watch is who's going to kind of take over. He'll probably go. He has to go kind of small ball once Dickinson is out of the game. And if Johns isn't capable of really taking that role by the reins, maybe we're going to be seeing Terrence Williams getting some more action here.
Yeah, it's something that I think might be at this point. Like, Brandon Johns is a junior, so there might be a switch that gets flipped at some point. But it's starting to feel like he's just kind of a guy who you can catch lightning in a bottle with him. You might have, I think when he's out there, he's going to bring energy. But maybe it's like Tasmanian Devil energy, where it's just, you're too wound up. You're too wild. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I think I was going to say, I think you saw that in the first 5 minutes of the second half today. Three turnovers in the first 5 minutes of the second half and didn't play again after that.
Yeah. He had late in the first half, he had a sequence where I don't know if it was a good defensive play or a block at the other end of the court. And then he comes back and hoists a three and hits it. Like, that's the vision of what he can be. And Chris, I mean, he's a Lansing guy, so you're familiar with him. Like, he was a killer in high school.
He was a machine. Yeah.
Mr. Basketball guy, someone who we talked about this in the group text earlier, Chris, when he committed to Michigan, Tom Izzo, when he signed with Michigan, Tom Izzo called him, or when he called Tom Izzo, Izzo lit his ass up. Like, and I don't know if that's maybe a mental thing.
I do have to say that is I like this guy, but that is according to Brandon Johns. Now, yes. With the extent of that, we're not completely sure, but that's according to him. He said that, his exact quote was, he went on a real long rant and I didn't expect that. And maybe, maybe he's using that as motivation, but I think the general point that we're trying to make is it's not a matter of ability. I mean, this was a very highly recruited player who was, a scoring machine, a rebounding machine when he was in high school. It is kind of just, it's a confidence thing. And it is a matter of,
it's different when you, and this is another old man cliche. It's different when you play with guys that are as good as you are.
Yeah. Sure.
So it's hard to find that next year.
Well, last year he was, I mean, I wouldn't go as far to say he was amazing last year when Livers was out, but this was a guy.
He was pretty good.
Regularly scoring double digits. He carried Michigan at Madison Square Garden against Rutgers.
Mm-hmm. That's
he
right.
Carried Michigan at Nebraska when they were without Livers and without Simpson. I mean, this is the kind of guy that you should be able to rely on as a junior and a guy who's proven himself in the past. So I think you can consider the beginning of this year a major step.
It's going to be worth watching because if he, and again, I'm not accusing him of dogging it because he does bring energy.
Right.
But if he goes through those stretches where he doesn't play good minutes and Terrence Williams continues to play good minutes, it might be a situation where, again, maybe some sort of changing of the guard takes place, and I won't speculate about people's futures, but we know the recruiting class is coming in next year. I think, you know, from a bigger picture thing, what Michigan maybe, I don't know if they'll practice this over these next 12 days. I know Juwan was pretty adamant he's going to give his guys some time off because it's been, you know, you trying to play games in this environment, as we're seeing with the football program, can be, it's a meat grinder right now. And to have some time to step back and decompress, I think that could be good for them. I'm not worried about them cooling down because Sunday was kind of that anyways. But I do wonder if during this downtime, we might see them work on playing a little more up tempo, because they're down pretty significantly in tempo this year. They were, I think, 150 last year. KenPom has them currently at 229. I think when Hunter Dickinson's not on the floor, you have to play a little faster. So I wonder if that's something maybe we see starting on, you know, Christmas Day when they play this game at Nebraska.
And that is a really good point. But my counter to that would be they also continue to turn the ball over a lot, and it's hard to run up tempo if you're consistently turning the ball over. Then you do, you know, as Izzo describes, the possibility of turnovers into touchdowns. I mean, that was the one thing when the Beeline era was really firing, is that they were somehow miraculously a team that ran up tempo and never turned the ball over. This is a team that still, I mean, one of the reasons why they almost lost this game, 16 turnovers in this game against Penn State. And you got to give credit to Penn State from the jump, even when they were behind early. I thought the defense was pretty smothering, but just a lot of inconsistent offensive performances. Shondi Brown, I think, only attempted 2 shots, did not score. Still an elite defender, adds a lot to the team. But I guess before we call it quits, because I feel like I've been talking a lot, do you guys have anything else to add? Michigan going to have, what, 12 days off until their next game, which will be Nebraska on Christmas Day.
I think playing on Christmas Day sucks and is bullshit.
Stupid.
That would be my one take. Mike Smith belongs too. I think he can, it's pretty clear he can quarterback and run a high major offense. I don't know if his, you know, points will be high. I think there's a chance maybe he scores less than Xavier Simpson did. But I don't think he's going to be relied on to carry that type of load either, but it's pretty apparent to me, and we'll see, there's a lot of good guards in the Big Ten. Guard play is going to determine a lot moving forward, but he looks up to the task. I mean, that was a great find by Juwan Howard. Cause I think the concern for a lot of people was, you know, and you know, Jaron Simmons is on the staff right now, but that was a guy where you brought him in from Ohio a couple of years ago thinking maybe this guy could, you know, grad transfer, maybe can give us some good minutes at point guard, just never really wound up doing much for them. So anytime you bring in transfer guards like that, that concern is there, but I don't have that concern with Mike Smith. And I think he deserves a salute here.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And I will use my last call to slow the hype train on the Dickinson one and done.
Please do. Good. I hope he stays 4 years.
I think that's a legitimate possibility. My guess would be 3. I don't think that the NBA is calling for big, immobile, 7'1" back to the basket left-handers who struggle in pick and roll defense. Is that an area where he can get better? Are all of these areas where he can get better? Sure. He said today that he expects to be a better outside shooter, and it's just going to take a couple to get rolling. But as of now, I really don't think a one and done is in the cards. I think that watching Diabate at the 4 next year and Dickinson at the 5 is going to be
awesome.
Pretty jaw-dropping. I think that while Dickinson has been phenomenal, he's got a long way to go before he starts popping up in mock drafts.
I hope you're right too. He's playing so good that you just, you know, you wonder a little more. We just didn't expect him to be here.
Right.
And again, he is an older freshman like Brazdeikis was. That's where it's not like Iggy is, you know, lighting up the league right now. He's, you know, sitting on the bench for the Knicks right now as they play the Pistons in Detroit. So, he's playing really well. He's ahead of schedule. The league's not really, those types of guys aren't really in demand, but, you know, playing well is playing well. So,
yeah. Now you look at like Daniel Oturu, who was the same thing Dickinson was, second round pick last year. Luca Garza didn't get the NBA buzz that he wanted, so he came back to Iowa. I think a lot of these, Xavier Tillman was nearly undrafted. Yeah. So,
no, you're right. It wasn't my intent to fuel one and done right. hype.
Not you. I've seen it out there.
Those are people that watch Michigan and don't really understand how the NBA works right now. I mean, you have guys like, it's just a different animal. So we'll see. Hope he stays 4 years. I hope he breaks all the records. I hope he's the next, Frank Kaminsky, Luka Garza. Like, that'd be awesome.
And there is truth to the fact that I think this is scary. I think there's a second gear to his game that is yet to be unleashed because he's being asked to fill a role, and he's filling his role about as well as anybody else in the Big Ten is right now, outside of Garza, if you're talking big men. But you watch his high school tapes, you see some three balls. I mean, you see a guy with ball handling capabilities. Previewed it a little bit, I believe shot one three, a kind of an ill-advised three, but shot one today, and I believe shot one last game against Toledo as well. When the offense calls for it, I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the case this year. There may be a guy who's, and we saw it, I still think it was a bit forced, but we saw it with Teske. I mean, Teske's last year and a half at Michigan, a guy who started shooting 4 or 5 threes a game, it seemed. Maybe it was less than that. It always felt like it. But, maybe there is that other element that is yet to be unleashed. Hopefully we'll see it. But as it stands, Juwan Howard's crew, despite stumbling a little bit, stumbling a lot on Sunday against Penn State, 6-0, now going into what will be I'd call it the Christmas break, but they play on Christmas. So winter break, sure, we'll call it that. That will do it.
Mental break.
Yeah, right.
For all of
which
us.
Which I think we all need a little bit right now.
Except for those of us who might have a football game to cover on Saturday night.
I forgot to text you. Another night game, Anthony. We still got one more.
We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. but okay, that will do it for today's show. Before we head out, you guys want to plug your social medias real quick?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Anthony T. Broom. Follow the website at Maize and Brew. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. Join the Discord. Get the podcast wherever you get our shows. Again, it's been probably the best couple months of content we've ever put out as a team. Mm-hmm. So hop on the train, join the ride, and we're happy to have you.
You can find me on Twitter at Daniel_, and everything that I write about Michigan basketball at Maize and Brew.
Yeah, I mean, most of my opinions you can find on here, but I am still on Twitter. I haven't sent anything out in a while, but at Castellani 2014, I don't know, maybe I'm just waiting until baseball season comes back. We'll see. But I do have another show, Locked on Tigers. You can find that at Locked on Tigers on Twitter, and you can find a Locked on Tigers wherever podcasts can be found, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever. They are Monday through Friday covering Detroit Tigers baseball and other goings on throughout the world of Major League Baseball every day of the week for the Locked On Podcasting Network. So, while you're at it, go ahead, follow us on all those platforms. So that will do it for this week's show. We will be right back here probably next Sunday covering whatever news breaks. And who knows, we might even have something special for you. So thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. Have a great rest of your night.